Movies On Up, episode 25. It's getting weirder. Not quite weirder, it's getting more normal. Back to our normal three-man weave with myself, Ryan, with Kevin.
Que pasa?
And with the old school back together, Dave's back from Paris Island.
De Posse.
Yeah, De Posse is back together. Fair enough, I don't speak Spanish or whatever it is that you're speaking.
Street.
I do speak tagline, however, and if you think you recognize the tagline, it's getting weirder from a movie, first off, I'm going to call bullshit on that because there's no way you recognize that. It would have to be just because you heard our last week's episode and you heard me mention this movie about five or six times, much to the chagrin of our fill-in co-host. Yeah, I think if you listen to last week, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a sequel. It's kind of weirder than the first one. Not necessarily as good. But if you do know what it is, put it in an email to us. You can get us through email at moviesonup@gmail.com. If you head to our website, which is the appropriately named moviesonup.com, you can do one of a couple things. You can click on our Facebook link, go over to the Facebook and post it on there. Or you can get at us at Twitter, which is @moviesonup. Let us know what you think that movie is, and we'll send you out probably a prize pack if you're right. And if we like you, you know, all of the normal contingencies that I put on giving away prizes. But so that's what we talked about last week, was this particular movie. This week, Mr. Kevin, what will we be talking about?
Well, last week we told you our horror feature this week would be a surprise. But wait no more. We're going to be doing a director deathmatch, a tournament of sorts, to determine horror's greatest director. But before that, we've got a good deal of news to cover, including comic news and news that is comedy, because Nick Cage is involved with Kirk Cameron in a religious sort of way.
When you said deathmatch, is director deathmatch, like, so to speak, or something, it sounded like a Peter Jackson subtitle. Or like, I was like, that's awesome. That's going to be the fourth Hobbit movie, which didn't come out this week. The fourth in a series did open in wide release this week, and that was Paranormal Activity 4. I hope you stayed, because I guess there was some Spanish spoken at the end of that. There was some kind of Latin American Paranormal Activity movie. I don't think any of us saw it.
No, I didn't see it. But it did open weaker than any of the other three, but still almost doubled the number two spot. It came in number one with just under $30 million at 29, but again, $5 million budget. So five is coming, and next year there's also Latina one coming this spring. Argo. Interesting with Argo, $16 million for second place. That's only a 15% drop from its opening weekend. That's the smallest drop ever for a movie on 3,000 plus screens. So it's holding very well. It's made $43 million already on $44.5 million budget.
So Argo 2?
Hopefully. Go to Munich. Taken 2 continues to make some money at $13 million. It's over the $105 million mark. Hotel Transylvania puts another 13 in to go at 118 for total. The other wide release, Alex Cross, not so hot.
That's a Tyler Perry movie.
The Tyler Perry joint. Well, he didn't direct it.
For those of you white people.
It only brought in $11.3 million on a $35 million budget, so he might have his first not huge hit.
Well, you still got that up there for a Fantasy Film Ball update. How is Looper over budget yet?
Looper is at 57.8 million. And it's on a $30 million budget.
Okay. I know a couple people had Looper in the film ball.
Yeah, but Sinister, what's interesting about Sinister, Sinister came in number six with another $8 million, which was a 50% drop last week. But that's a $31.7 million so far. That was made for $3
million. We usually will stick in a review if one of our listeners saw it. She doesn't listen to the podcast. I'm not even sure she knows what a podcast is. But my sister saw that movie. And
how's your sister doing, by the way?
She's doing well. She said that it was fucked up. That was her review of the film in typical Movies On Up fashion.
I thought it'd be sneaky to where maybe it might actually be good. It looks...
She said the kills were pretty fucked up, and she watches some strange shit.
To go to a couple of the limiteds, The Sessions, the John Hawks joint, $113,000 on four screens. So that was a $28,000 per screen average. That was really the only successful one, really. Holy Motors got a lot of buzz coming out of Cannes. It pulled in $18,000 on two screens. And then The Flat was $19,000 on three screens, which I think is generous because it looks terrible.
Although, if you want to see the gay dude from Modern Family act straight, I guess that's your jam.
The flap. I actually think he's acting gay.
I think you're probably right, because I've heard he pulls some major tail, which is completely off topic.
Network TV tail is pretty awesome.
I wouldn't know. Someone who would know all about tail, probably, Nicolas Cage. Just bear with me for a little bit, because it'll take a while to get where I'm going on this one. But if you go to a restaurant with Nick Cage, when the bill shows up, he may say that his wallet has been left behind. And as Kevin teased in our opening, Stony Lake Entertainment, taking their first crack at moviedom, will relaunch the franchise Left Behind that was spawned from the 16-book series. Paul Lalonde will co-write, along with Left Behind 3 scribe John Pattis. The film will have a $15 million budget, which I believe is about three times more than the budget for the original one. No word on whether Cage will play Rayford Steele, the Kirk Cameron role, or the devil Nikolai Carpathia.
Oh God, I hope Carpathia.
Oh God, I...
Nicolas Cage as the devil? Fuck yes, please. I don't care how religious this movie is. Him as the devil would be fucking hilarious, because you know he's going to bring it. He's going to out Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate. Like, Nicolas Cage as the devil would be amazing.
The involvement of Nicolas Cage, whatever role he's playing, obviously this series has pretty narrow, hardcore religious perspective. So for them to bring in an outsider, per se, I don't know what his religious affiliations are. But
Ghost Rider?
Yes. So it's kind of interesting. Nicolas Cage, of all people.
I'm just curious how it works, because it is a super religious story. Can you mainstream it up and still not alienate its core audience? I don't know that it can.
I don't get the impression that they're really trying to mainstream it up. I think they're just trying to dump more money into it so that, you know, your hardcore nuts will see it again. And then, I don't know.
What is this, the religious Star Wars?
I guess it could be.
They're just going to keep re-releasing it with more stuff.
Well, fuck it. Morons,
I can't wait for
like
Black
me.
Left Behind.
Tyler Perry's Left Behind.
Yes.
You know what? That wouldn't even be a funny movie. Of course all the black people would be left behind, because they'd be late to the salvation. Because black people are late for everything.
I didn't realize we were doing that kind of
just
podcast.
Just head shakes on that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I make one racist remark and the podcast grinds to a screeching halt. I guess that about figures. Looking forward to Days of Future Past, Mark Millar, Fox's Marvel guru, and his bro, Matthew Vaughn, recently gave an interview to SFX magazine where Millar referred to Vaughn's upcoming X-Men sequel as X-Men Meets the Terminator. The sequel will feature time travel and big ol' robots. Will release July 18th. 2014.
This is a great idea. I was super stoked when they announced that it was Days of Future Past, because you can work in any of the good elements from the first series of X-Men and reintroduce them into this, but I don't want them to try too hard. Like, that's my fear, is that they're going to get too maybe cameo-driven and focus more on what cool can we do to tie them together and take away from the story.
Right. This obviously a Paramount X-Men comic story. But didn't J.J. Abrams kind of do this with Star Trek, with the time travel?
Well, I compared X-Men First Class to Star Trek, because I thought X-Men First Class did for the X-Men franchise what Star Trek did, where you introduce a new continuity, but then they screwed it up with the Wolverine cameo, and I feel like they're going to screw that up with this.
Maybe.
Although, the prospects of a Michael Fassbender, Ian McKellen scene, I think I'd be on board with that. If they could pull it off somehow.
What X-Men nerds may get in this movie is a Bishop or Cable scene because of the time-traveling mutants.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a pretty high likelihood. I haven't read all of Days of Future Past, but from what I understand, Cable's kind of a big proponent in that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think more so than the Wolverine cameo, which I actually liked in the first class, I can totally foresee a lot of, or at least a good amount of Halle Berry. More,
I just
than
don't
I want
it to bring it down. That's my only fear.
No,
if done right, it'll be awesome. If not done right, it'll fall flat.
Well, you take First Class, which is very, very good. You take the original series, which isn't so good. You put them
one
together.
One and two. I think were really, right. Really good.
Yeah. But then you put, you know, the good and very good together. You just get good. You know, nothing fantastic, nothing great.
I mean, I've liked just about all of Matthew Vaughn's movies to this point. So I don't see And this is a cool story. So I think if you put a cool story with a guy that's capable of telling a good story, I think that, you know, we will look back on this from the future and think that was a good movie. Charlene Woodley set for a divergence in her career path. She's in talks to play the lead in the adaptation of Veronica Roth's Young Readers series. Seems to have a deal to land another amazing role as Mary Jane Watson in The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I never took Shailene Woodley serious because that show she's on ABC Family looks terrible. And then I saw, what was that, The Descendants?
Yes.
Holy shit, that girl is fucking talented. Like, she stole that movie. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but she went up with Clooney and, like, stole the screen from him, which is a feat.
She's absolutely great.
So, yes, give her a headline in a series, and then give her, you know, a big part in Spider-Man.
Unfortunately, I've actually watched that show she's on, Secret Life of the American Teenager. Is that it?
Something
is
like that.
Is that it?
I think that is it. I can't remember the title, but I've seen
it's
the show.
Who the fuck are you asking?
Yeah. But anyway.
I've only seen clips that have shown up on The Soup.
Her acting isn't the problem. That show has the worst dialogue ever written in history. So she's good. She's good. Both of these roles are very appropriate for her. It's going to work out.
Yeah. I mean, The Descendants just made me disappointed that she's wasting away on that show because she's fucking good. So yes, put her in franchises. Like, I want to see her in movies.
I think, as you're you know, fond of saying, that she may be about to blow up, you know, being in what could be, you know, the next Twilight, the next Hunger Games, whatever. And, you know, a franchise, a tentpole franchise like Spider-Man, that can only...
Because, like, I legit think she should have gotten nominated last year for Best Supporting Actress. Like, she was that good in Descendants.
Maybe she'll be that good in Spider-Man, because that movie's going to get nominated for a bunch of things in my heart. Once dead in the water, Deadpool rumor appears out of thin air, or at least Kickstarter. From his page for Goon, Tim Miller mentions an excellent script has been turned in and that somewhere there's some awesome test footage that may leak, may already have leaked. I don't know what the past tense of leak is. Maybe Ryan Reynolds does. He appears to be on board with creator Rob Liefeld. They're supposedly fully behind this script that's out. They've both read it and have seen the footage and dig it. With Tom Rothman out at Fox, apparently he was kind of a naysayer for Deadpool. The path to the screen seems to have gotten a bit easier, and we have David Fincher and Kickstarter to thank for that, Kevin.
Basically, this movie needs a green light, and it's going to happen. And publicity like this and seeing it appear in articles, it's going to tip the needle to make it happen. I'm confident in that.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if it waits until summer when RIPD comes out, because I don't know how, without looking up, how's Reynolds been at the box office? I don't think he's been gold lately. And you're selling a character that's not a major character, and it's a hard character to sell. He's a badass character, but in order to sell in the mainstream, it might be a little tough.
Right. Some people may assume you just make a comic book movie and it makes money, but look at Daredevil, you know.
Look at the last Ryan Reynolds comic book movie.
Green Lantern, which for some reason I watched, and boy, is it terrible.
Is that what it was called? Green Lantern?
Yeah. I mean, he did have Safe House, so I'm wrong. That was a big hit earlier this year. But
it was this year?
Or like, it was the first $100 million movie of the year.
I was just thinking, God damn, that seemed like a long time ago.
Okay, yeah, I'm wrong on Ryan Reynolds' box office, so maybe he doesn't need,
you know what, my problem with Ryan Reynolds is, I don't know a whole lot of guys that are like, man, Ryan Reynolds really rocks his shit. Like, girls like Ryan Reynolds. But then he gets male-driven franchises.
I think he can handle them, though. Like, I thought he was sufficient in Safe House. He wasn't asked to drive that movie, but I thought he did well steering it, because that was clearly a Denzel movie. But Green Lantern, I don't think he was the problem with it. I think he was poorly cast, but I don't know. Like, he was in a movie like Paper Man. He was awesome. Like, that's a very fun movie. I guess the smaller he is, the better, because I loved him in Adventureland, too.
With Deadpool, not that I read the book, but I had been told that, you know, one of the things that the character is famous for doing is sort of breaking the fourth wall. I believe that's part of the new script that's been written. But at one point in the comic, Deadpool says he should be played in a movie by Ryan Reynolds. And I do think that, you know, he would be very good for that. I mean, he kind of played that role in the Origins movie, the Wolverine joint, but I think that's kind of a watered-down version of what Wolverine.
And he's committed to the character.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Wolverine, for the last act of the movie, his face is so, you can't even tell it's Ryan Reynolds. So for an actor of his stature to care enough that he doesn't need that facial recognition at the end shows he cares about the character. So, I mean, I have high hopes for it if it happens, but I have my reservations.
Deadpool's a cool character, and I think that there are a lot of people that would love to see him on the big screen, and maybe we just got a little bit closer to that. The Justice League got a little closer to happening before they get onto the big screen and fight whatever villain they'll have be fighting there. They were able to defeat the Legion of Lawyers. Warner Brothers won the rights to Superman and can now move forward with the Justice League movie. It was kind of held up in the courts for a while. They can now slate the Justice League movie for 2015. If you think about that, I don't know, what other movies come out in 2015? Avengers 2, is that a problem?
Terrible idea. Like, you're kind of rushing it at this point. We're almost in 13, so you're going to do this huge movie in 2.5 years. Where you haven't started casting, you haven't done anything, take your time. Do 16, that one extra year, and maybe throw a Flash movie or something out ahead of time just to introduce. This means they're going to introduce pretty much all the characters. You're going to meet.
That's
you're
what
gonna
they meet, said kind of all right. along.
I knew you were going to meet new Batman there, which makes sense, but to introduce Flash and Wonder Woman in this doesn't make any sense. I think it's a terrible idea, especially if Armie Hammer is Batman, which is what the talks have been, like, terrible.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, but the way I understand it, Superman will lead in the Justice League, Cavill will reprise the role, and then everyone else will be spun off of the Justice League, but having that movie go against the Avengers is crazy. But basically, as far as the court case goes, if they would have lost, any Superman-related marketing would have been held up as far as Justice League goes. They would have had to delay it 16, 17.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at, you know, like, the Avengers, as much movies that made in the box office, you look at all, like, the kids' toys it came out with, and, you know, this Halloween, you can be your favorite Avenger, I'm going to be Thor. So, yeah, I think that would have been kind of a big pain in the ass. As much as, you know, we think that you make movies to entertain people and to make a good movie a lot of times, and being a Star Wars fan, believe me, I know, it is all about the merchandise.
If they were thinking, like, they could have done it, have a Flash short film before Superman or something. Have a Wonder Woman, like, 10 to 15 minute anime, like Pixar does, where they open with a short film. Anything to introduce the characters,
right?
Just going in blind, even if there's, I mean, do a animated feature of them leading up, like a Flash feature or something, but I don't like the going in blind.
Right now it's October 2012, basically say 2013. That gives them 2.5 years to write a script, cast everyone, you know, plan out their spinoffs. Because if this comes out in 2015, you're not going to want to wait till 2017 for a spinoff. You're going to want that spinoff the next spring.
I just think they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I think the timing is a bit off. I mean, they've always kind of been doing the inverse of the Avengers.
They don't have a director yet.
There's a lot of things that they don't have, but I think they realize that they're kind of playing catch up. They're already behind, and they're trying to do everything they can do to not fall further behind Marvel. And that, you know, rushing to get things is not generally the way to do it. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure we'll be hearing some more Justice League trickling in between now and 2015. Staying with Marvel, we kind of mentioned it with Avengers 2, Iron Man 3 writer Drew Pearce drops the other F word with Jason Segel. The two have sold their comedy featuring aging punkers who become fathers. It sounds a lot like This Is 40 with guitars.
I can't fucking wait for this. There is a documentary called The Other F Word, which is this. It's just a bunch of dudes from bands I grew up listening to that now have kids.
Tony Hawk, like,
it's an amazing documentary. Like, definitely check it out if you can. But Jason Segel's perfect for this.
Absolutely, he's the perfect cast. I mean, the perfect guy in Hollywood to put this on the screen. And this formula isn't new. Taking a documentary and turning it into a feature film. You've got Dogtown and Z-Boys did it. King of Kong has a script where they're supposed to do a feature film based on the documentary.
It's been in the works forever.
It's been a few years. Originally, it was Nathan Fillion, who we like to talk about on the show.
But it's an awesome story. It's an awesome documentary. Like, I can't recommend it enough. Like,
right.
Because it's about, like, some of them still tour. Like, it's not like they've retired as punk rockers.
Right, the one dude's got the, like, dominatrix tattoos, and he's like, how do I explain this to my 4-year old? And they talk about dealing with being on the road. And this movie, it's right in Jason Segel's comfort zone. And like you said, this is 40 with Guitars, based on a pretty pertinent documentary. It's all kinds of win.
That's a good log line. I'm sure they'll probably steal it from you later, but maybe they'll send you a button from the movie. Who knows? From comics to comic strips, The Family Circus, being developed by Fox and Walden Media, will be written by Nicole Millard and Catherine Price from The Game Plan. Waterman Entertainment bringing The Heathcliff. These are the guys that think it's a good idea to do a Mr. Ed movie. So I can't really say that there's a whole lot of people that still read comic strips. This kind of stinks like a bad idea.
Yeah, but these are, if you can make them cheap enough, they're going to make, you throw family garbage out there, doesn't matter how bad it looks, it's going to make something. If you can make it in that 10 to 15 range, it's going to be profitable.
Right. The like you said, the duo that did Game Plan, so you can kind of expect the type of movie you're getting. In my mind, it's like studios say, we can't get any more comic book franchises, so we're going to do comic strips instead.
Yeah, but as few people actually read comic books, I got to think a fraction of those people.
And Family Circus isn't even the best. It's like the fifth best comic strip.
You know, maybe that'll be our top five next week.
I haven't looked at a newspaper in 12 years.
Top five Kevin's favorite comic strips.
Good luck.
But I mean, look forward to that segment, folks.
They're familiar. Like people, they're known. Like people may not read Family Circus, but they know what Family Circus is. People know Heathcliff, Mr. Ed. People know Mr. Ed. Doesn't matter if they've been following the characters. And you're looking at something like Family Circus. What effects does it take? You can make that dirt ass cheap.
People know the bubonic plague, but they tend to avoid that too.
Contagion did well.
Speaking of animals, and talking to animals, Caesar to produce an adaptation of Orwell's Animal Farm. That's one smart monkey. Andy Serkis, of course, played Caesar in Rise of the Avengers of the Escape of the Planet of the Monkeys. His production studio, The Imaginarium, is going to produce a project that is said to be a more family-oriented allegory of Stalin-era Russia pre-World War II. And doesn't that just seem like it's ready for a family allegory?
I actually think he's directing this. Like, I had read an update that he's...
I think he's directing,
he's directing it also.
And his company is producing it.
Yeah.
He may even act.
Which,
act.
He's
he may
the
be
right
an
one to... I love the book. I really do. And I think he's the one to bring it.
People are shitting on this already, but it's obviously early. It's obviously going to be well done with him involved. But is there an audience for this other than high school students who want to watch the movie instead of read the book?
I'd see it.
Yeah, I think it, especially, you know, kind of what Dave hinted at, like, Serkis is so good at everything he does.
Gollum?
Gollum, Caesar. And look at
Serkis' career.
Like,
he could have cashed in big time after, he got famous for Lord of the Rings. Like, he was a character actor up until then. He blew up. He could have been taking on-screen roles like he did in 13 Going on 30, but he didn't go that route. He stayed. He was King Kong. Like, he did Caesar. Like, he's been doing things he's passionate about, like things he wants to do, and he hasn't went for that like home run, like I want to make it big. So like for him to take on a project like this, it shows he cares. And for a book like this, it's somebody like that you need to do it, because it is an awesome story. It's an amazing book. So you need somebody that cares about it to bring it to the big screen.
And it doesn't seem like it's a straight adaptation necessarily. Like they have a particular idea and a way that they'd like to present it. And that sounds new. And as much as we shit on people for just kind of bringing something old to the screen again, just for the sake of making more money, I do think that, you know, he's the right guy. He cares about it. And he's bringing something new. So I'm totally willing to give Mr. Serkis a chance. Not really willing to give Old Boy, a Spike Lee joint, a chance. It gets a Spike Lee release date. Spike Lee will open on October the 11th of 2013. The year of our Lord Spike Lee, opposite Paranoia, which is the Harrison Ford and Liam Hemsworth joint, and Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
I don't think they're all three going to end up on that day.
I hope not, because I really want to see two of
actually, you know what? It looks like Paranoia and Sin City both jumped to the fourth already.
Oh, damn it.
I was going to say one or both of those are going to move, and it looks like they both jumped up to the fourth already. Because I think Old Boy will be good. Mid-October is the perfect time to release that. Like, Spike Lee's a big-time name. It's got, you know, Josh Brolin's hot right now. It's got the cast that can do well. You'll have fans of the original that may be hesitant, but they'll see it. And it's a cool enough story that it'll be easy to market to attract a new audience. I think it'll be huge.
If you listen to this show, you know that I'm obviously a fan. Along with the release date, we got a new synopsis. It mirrors the original exactly, other than they've added 5 years of imprisonment. So now instead
of 20?
Yeah, so now it's 20 instead of 15. But I'm curious to know why. But as far as the release date goes, I guess it's appropriate, mid-October, because it's not really a Christmas or a summer movie. So,
no, it doesn't even take place during Christmas, so it won't be in our list of Christmas movies that have nothing to do with Christmas.
But you know what? It is put out at a time where Brolin, if he brings it, or if Spike Lee brings it, it's in that Oscar-ish time to where it could sneak in if it's
Spike
good.
Lee always brings it.
Yeah, so
I'm still surprised. Spike Lee and Old Boy, the first time I heard this news, so shocking to me.
You know what? If you think Spike Lee like Spike Lee joints, it doesn't make sense. But if you think Spike Lee like Inside Man, which was his most mainstream movie,
Yeah. That
was a well-made movie. That was done very well. So if he takes that approach and he makes Old Boy like a mainstream movie, yeah.
I just don't like that his name's all over everything. That just kind of pisses me off.
I want to see Spike Lee direct a Tyler Perry movie.
I don't think that could happen because Tyler Perry's got to have his name like above the title and Tyler Perry, Spike Lee, Spike Perry Lee. I don't know how that would work. Everyone, get your pencil down or like get your pencil out, write this shit down. Dave is about to admit that he was wrong.
I meant to bring it up at the beginning of the show, but I completely forgot and I actually even had it written down. It was brought to my attention last week by listener Jason West. I mentioned that I love Dream Warriors, and one of my reasons was that it introduced me to the song Anything, Anything by Dramarama. That was not until Nightmare 4, or Friday, yeah, Nightmare 4.
Yeah, I fucked that up.
I remembered the scene where the dude's just kickboxing and punching a punching bag for no reason, and in my head I just equate that with, oh, he's being warrior-like. So I equate that with Dream Warriors, but it isn't until Nightmare 4 that Dramarama shows up.
And Jason West is like our mistake police.
Yeah.
He's like our stat boy.
We need one.
The Tony Reale of our show. You know what? We probably fucked so many things up. Like, we could probably employ an army of stat men and women. Probably we'll fuck up quite a few things when we get into our
director deathmatch. Match.
Actually, it's funny. These guys have not seen the brackets at all. So I'm going to just kind of surprise you by telling you what the brackets are. I've done it two different sides. We've got an American division and a national division. So of course the American division is all American directors. We've got 8 directors. I seeded them 1 through 8, and in NCAA tournament style, single elimination, fight to the finish, etc. We're gonna go ahead and start in the American bracket. American division. We'll give you the number 1 seed, John Carpenter, versus the number 8 seed, John Landis. I think we all are pretty much familiar with John Carpenter's work. Of course, he of Halloween fame, The Thing, which is a kind of a house favorite, as well as They Live, which is more of a house favorite than I thought it might be. John Landis, American Werewolf in London, Twilight Zone the movie, and this one, I can't help but putting it in, but he made Thriller.
Yeah, you couldn't leave that
Thriller.
Out.
No, you can't, which doesn't qualify as a horror movie, but it's pretty damn awesome in its own right. So, who wants opening remarks?
I think this one's easily Carpenter, not just because he's the one seed, but I think Landis for me was a bubble pick.
Landis, there's not enough as a horror director. He's a real good director, but
he's a great comedy director. Exactly. Most of his movies are comedies.
Right, whereas John Carpenter, I mean, you named Halloween, Halloween 2, The Fog, The Thing, They Live. Carpenter definitely has the style, he's known only as a horror director, and there's a lot of distinctive traits that allow you to pick out that it is a John Carpenter movie.
I mean, the only argument you could make is Landis went for quality. Like, he only made a couple, but they were really good. Like, his few forays into it were, he did it right.
Were excellent,
whereas
yeah.
Carpenter's went... I mean, he has a lot of quality, but there's also a lot of...
He's got some
quality.
Shit.
Right. He's got
and
quantity over the...
The
I mean,
last,
it's still not close.
The
it's
last
still
thing
a landslide.
He, yeah, the last thing he came out with...
The Ward was garbage.
Was shit.
Ward,
yeah. But the thing with Carpenter, and the reason that he's a number one seed, other than the fact that I was doing it, is because we both think If you look at Halloween and The Thing, they're perfect horror movies.
Yeah.
He has two perfect horror movies. So I mean, there's nobody else on our list of American guys or even really national guys that can boast two perfect movies.
Plus,
so,
like, they live and In the Mouth of Madness, like, have their audiences, mm-hmm. and were really, really well-made movies. Yeah, Carpenter easily. So, he's going to be tough to beat all
around.
Yeah,
3-0 Carpenter.
The only thing that hurts Carpenter later in the rounds, but I'm sure we'll get to it, is that his prime was primarily in the 70s and 80s, and then afterwards his movies were so few and far between.
I don't think that's going to hurt him. Just looking at who we have left,
like younger,
not going to hurt him.
Younger horror fans probably don't appreciate him for what he is. I see Kevin's point. But he's still, when you build up that strong.
Well, that's the thing. Like the
Michael
younger,
Jordan hasn't won any titles in a while, but
yeah,
he's still Michael
Jordan. Like the younger guys, like Ty West almost made the list, but he's really only been doing it for
and that's I did suggest
five, six
that
years.
Name, like a Ty West or even like a Joe Lynch is on his way there. Like there's this new
Ty
crop.
West, Green,
yeah.
Rob Zombie,
even,
some of those guys.
Eli Roth has been
Eli
a little
Roth.
Longer. Like there's a new crop.
Those guys are
level.
In the NIT.
Yeah,
they're
coming up. Like
they just haven't been doing it as long. These guys that we have been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah.
So they've got the catalog and that's why they're in. These other guys, you know, maybe we take John Landis off if we do this in 10 years and we add Ty West. I don't know, but for now, I can only do 8, so that's where we did. So Carpenter in a breeze in the first our first game. We'll go with the number 2 seed, Wes Craven. Versus the number 7 seed, Stuart Gordon. Wes Craven, I kind of think this was a tough one to determine who would be the number 1 overall seed. Wes Craven, Scream, Nightmare on Elm Street series, and one of my favorites, Last House on the Left, which was very early on in kind of the slasher era. So those are kind of the three that I picked out for him. And Stuart Gordon, the Reanimator, From Beyond, Dagon, did a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stuff, which has kind of a special place in my heart. So what are your thoughts on the 2-7 matchup?
I think it's a sneaky one. I think it's closer than... I know it's tough sell because Craven is... His name is synonymous with it. But Gordon, for being, you know, kind of an under... I mean, Dolls, you know, you said Reanimator. Pit and the Pendulum. Like, he's got some really good movies under his belt. Do they have the sustainability that Craven's do? Probably not, but I think it's closer than you would think.
I think both of these guys have very distinct styles.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, you can tell when you're watching a Wes Craven movie, you can tell when you're watching a Stuart Gordon movie, and they both are outstanding at what they do. I think kind of what hurts Gordon is most of his stuff is adaptations from Lovecraft, which he's already working with something that's so good and does have a very distinct feel.
But this is just a director's list.
Yes.
So that proves he can take work and adapt it like a motherfucker. Gordon as a director is fantastic. You know, he really happens to like H.P. Lovecraft. I personally give it to Wes Craven just because his movies have tended to transcend the genre. Right when everyone was doing one thing, Craven threw a curveball. Look at Scream.
Scream kind of reinvented the slasher.
Absolutely. Yeah,
because it was kind of dead after the 80s.
Nightmare on Elm Street 1 and 2. And he's so good at so many things. Blurs reality.
New Nightmare. That's another one that kind of...
He reinvented his own franchise. And I mean, but then even like Shocker from the 80s, which was... Or that was, 89.
Mm-hmm.
Was a fun, like, stupid horror movie. But then Serpent and the Rainbow... Hills Have Eyes, like he's got, and then People Under the Stairs, which was like a family horror movie. I think that's the best way to describe it. It was like a horror movie for kids.
The thing I like about Wes Craven is all of his movies, there's memorable scenes, there's memorable imagery that sticks with you that you really can't mistake as anything but Wes Craven. So I give the edge to Wes Craven over Stuart Gordon.
Yeah, I do too. That's it's kind of tough. I do think that maybe that's closer than the 1-8 matchup. But I think that it does have to go with Wes Craven. The 3-6 matchup features George Romero, the father of the zombie movies. Of course, Night of the Living Dead, but he also did some other stuff that didn't involve zombies. The Crazies, and I've mentioned before, I love Creepshow. He was the director of that movie as well. And Joe Dante from The Piranha, Howling, and Dave's personal favorite, Gremlins.
He's like Landis, where he hasn't done as much, but Piranha spawned some sequels, you know, and then spawned a remake that spawned a sequel. The Howling. There's so many Howlings.
Quite a few of those.
Like, yeah, he wasn't involved in all of them. And then Gremlins is a classic. And then Gremlins 2 wasn't your traditional sequel because it was a completely different movie. So, I mean, Dante, I realize he wasn't on the original list. I wanted him on there.
I think small window for Dante. As far as Romero goes, he's known as the godfather of all zombies. You can't deny his influence on all modern movies, as I think every movie that came out this year has zombies in it somewhere. And he actually, fun fact about Romero, has nothing to do with his directing, but maybe he learned a thing. He actually worked on 4 Hitchcock movies with Hitchcock, and he actually made 2 Evil Eyes with Argento, who may appear on this list.
Probably.
But Romero, so influential. Not only were they zombie movies, they had a bigger message. Still at it. The newer ones are kind of dog shit, but...
Yeah, and I mean, Romero, he's an icon. Like, him as a 3-seed is kind of a... He could potentially be 1. Like,
could, but like, that's the thing. Like,
no, I realize that. Like,
any of our top 3 seeds...
1, 2, and 3 could have all been the 1 seed,
yeah.
And you can't argue it.
Yeah.
But you take a look... You mentioned Creepshow, but you look outside of the zombie stuff. Monkey Shines was a creepy fucking movie. That movie's about a killer tiny-ass monkey. Like, that movie shouldn't be terrifying. It was. And then in 2000, he did Bruiser, which it was a unique... I don't even know what to call it. Like, it's a horror, I guess. It's a slasher, kind of, but not really. Like, a revenge movie. I mean, he did Bruiser, which was interesting. His last 3 Dead movies have been terrible, and I have no interest in it.
You know what?
Romero.
I just watched Land of the Dead a couple nights ago with The Mentalist. That's not terrible.
No,
it's
not. That's all right.
That is one where he actually got back to something that he hadn't done really since Dawn of the Dead, making an actual statement with one of his movies. And I really, even the last one, or Diary of the Dead.
Diary, he tried to make
a
statement.
Yeah,
too.
But it wasn't done as well. But Land of the Dead... I will disagree with you on that one. That one's good. It's better than Day of the Dead. But I think that Romero does have to go on this one. Again, that's another 3-0. The next one, the 4-5 matchup, may not be as easy to pick as some of the other ones were. The 4-seed, Tobe Hooper, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist. And I put Life Force on there just because I kind of like that movie. And the 5-seed, Sam Raimi, Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, Drag Me to Hell. Now, obviously, the 2 seeds. I thought these guys were both really, really close. I think, you know, either one of them really could have been the 4, could have been the 5.
This one kind of gives me a headache a little bit just because it is so close. Hooper's later work is really bad. Mortuary, I brought up last week. That movie is one of the worst films I've ever seen. If his filmography ended in the 80s, he's got maybe a 1-seed sort of legacy. If you ask people what their favorite horror movie is, you know, 1 out of 3 responses is probably Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is Tobe Hooper. But Sam Raimi, I mean, he's stylistic, he's influential, he understands horror, he invented a bunch of new shots, he presents horror in a different way that no one else can. So I'm having a tough time with this one.
You can't take away Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think that's one of the ultimate horror movies. Like, I think that's one of the best ever. From an everything about movie making thing, I think that's one of the best. But I don't think there was enough. Outside of that, in Texas Chainsaw 2, there's not a whole... In Poltergeist.
Funhouse, mm-hmm. Poltergeist, Salem's Lot. See, Raimi, you've got the Evil Dead series, which you got Darkman, which I'm sure we could argue about.
Whether or not that's a horror movie.
But then he went on to do... He kind of got out of the genre. He went back and made Drag Me to Hell, which is excellent.
But that's the thing, is he got out of the genre, kind of. Like... Darkman, yeah, it's kind of a superhero movie. There's horror elements to it.
There's even
a
horror elements.
A Simple Plan is not a horror movie, not even close to a horror movie. It's got a horror tone to it. Like,
yeah.
He managed to carry that horror tone into, like, that kind of movie. And even in Spider-Man 2, the Doc Ock scenes.
Very much.
Came off like a slasher.
Evil Dead,
so, I mean, he took that horror with him everywhere. The Gift.
Yeah.
We'll forgive him for that one, but Katie Holmes' tits. But, I mean, Drag Me to Hell was perfect. It showed he didn't lose anything. He's maybe going to redo Poltergeist, which is ironic in this.
It's on the IMDb thing, and that's it's not a mistake.
Yeah.
That's another reason that those two kind of matched up.
I think I'm going Raimi.
For me, I'll go Raimi because of Drag Me to Hell. Just the fact that Raimi went back, visited horror, and still made a kick-ass movie, whereas Tobe Hooper just started progressively getting worse.
I think Raimi had a bigger impact, despite Tobe Hooper making one of the best horror movies ever.
If you take out Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Tobe Hooper might not make this list.
Fair enough. If you take out Evil Dead, Sam Raimi may not make this list.
That's true, too.
But yeah, I think that's why you know, that's why they're kind of in the middle of the pack. I actually thought that I was going to have to break a tie on this one. I thought it'd be really, really close. But for me, it's Raimi. Basically, except for that one, we were chalk. Carpenter advanced over John Landis. Sam Raimi upsets Tobe Hooper. George Romero beats Joe Dante and Wes Craven over Stuart Gordon. Now let's switch gears. We'll do the first round of the National Division. We'll start off with the 1-8 matchup, which features a guy that we had just kind of talked about. Good buddies with George Romero. He's an Italian fella by the name of Dario Argento. You might know him from any of my ramblings on this podcast. Directed Suspiria, Phenomena, with a young Jennifer Connelly and some bugs, and Deep Red. I mean, Argento's one of my favorite cats of all time, and he'd be matching up with one of Dave's favorite cats of recently, and that's Alexander Aja, who did High Tension, Mirrors, and the aforementioned remake of Piranha.
Yeah, I mean, Mirrors kind of brings it down, but High Tension, amazing. Hills Have Eyes was done well. Like, it wasn't needed, but it was done well. Piranha, I thought he nailed. I know you disagree.
And no, I don't think it was that good.
And I have high hopes for Horns, but it's Argento.
Aja might, like you said, if we go back and do this list in 10 years, he might be a much higher seed because he's had a very solid body of work, a very bright future. But Argento, he's so influential on modern horror. John Carpenter claims that Deep Red was a huge influence on Halloween. Halloween's probably one of the top five horror movies of all time. And for Carpenter to say, well, it's because of Argento, I mean, that tells you why he's a one seed. He's adapted with the times. Well, he did adapt with the times. He embraced new technology. You can see it with his use of, like, the Steadicam in Phenomena. And easily Argento.
Yeah, I think so for me, too. It's not going to surprise anybody that I'm in the bag for Argento. Now, our second seed, also an Italian fella, also kind of friends with Dario Argento, and that is Lucio Fulci. He did Zombie 2, technically, in Italia, Zombie over here. He did a recut of Dawn of the Dead. He also did City of the Living Dead and The Beyond. This was another close one.
Who's he up against?
Yeah, we didn't know who he's up against.
Well,
are you just giving him the win?
Yeah, no, I didn't get done. I was going to say this was another close one where he could have been the number one seed, but he's not. He's the number two seed, so he takes on the number seven seed, you fuckers, which is Peter Jackson, who's got a zombie movie of his own called Dead Alive, also did Bad Taste, which was kind of an alien movie, and a movie that's maybe not necessarily horror, but I liked a lot, and I think people sometimes forget about, is The Frighteners.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the three I picked for Pete Jackson.
No, I love The Frighteners. Bad Taste, Dead Alive were just low budget. He did them on his own, pretty much. And they're great. They're classics in a way, because they're just funny. The Frighteners was great. It's tough, though, because then he veered away from it, and now he's not. He hasn't gone back. Like, if he would have done what Sam Raimi did and had made, like, a horror in place of, you know,
just
Lovely
between,
Bones or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Because, and he didn't do what Raimi did. Like, he's veered away from it. Where I said Raimi carried that horror tone into everything he's done.
He may be one of the few people on this list that is not known for being a horror director.
Yeah. And Jackson, if he went back and made horror movies from here on out after The Hobbit, he will still always be known for Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I mean, Lord of the Rings won Best Picture. So Fulci, he's called the godfather of gore, known for graphic violence, and the thing that helped Fulci's career, because he worked for a long time.
He had a zombie fight a shark.
Yeah, that too.
That's what I think of when I see him.
His movies, they got banned, they got X ratings, they got no ratings. Word of mouth, people said, hey, you got to see this, it's banned, there's maggots coming out, this guy's missing an eyeball.
And he was doing it in the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's not like he jumped in there at the boom. A lot of these are like 80s on. He was 60s.
He's been around. You know, obviously he's not around anymore. But I love Italian horror. These two top seeds I love. They may be two of my three favorite horror directors of all time. We'll see how far they get in the tournament. But yeah, I think it's Fulci, which is a shame because I love The Frighteners and I don't really care for Bad Taste too much. But I love Dead Alive.
Meet
but
the
just not a horror movie, but I like that one too.
Because even Peter Jackson went to King Kong, where you can add elements of horror.
You could.
It never had that suspense. Well,
Lord of the Rings has elements
more
of
horror than King Kong does, I think.
Yeah.
It's a tough matchup. It was going to be hard for anybody to beat either one of these.
Jackson, honestly, it's a bad thing in this tournament that he made Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, because they just, you know,
yeah,
this
is a horror.
They outweigh anything he's going to do.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty solid. 3-0 Fulci. Speaking of number three, the number three seed. This is a guy that Kevin absolutely loves so much he can't manage to say his name right. That's David Cronenberg, or Borg, or Cronenberg, whatever the fuck you called him. The Fly, of course, that's kind of his iconic horror movie. Also, did Scanners, so good it'll make your head explode. And The Dead Zone, he matches up against a sneaky six seed. Guillermo del Toro, Kronos, The Devil's Backbone, and Pan's Labyrinth. Among his credits, he's Hellboy, which is maybe not a horror movie. Maybe
Mimic?
Yeah, I didn't put Mimic on there because I wanted to put Kronos on instead because I like that movie better. But this one to me is tough. Cronenberg, not necessarily. He's made horror movies and he's made good ones. But I think more recently, you know, we talk about it with Peter Jackson. Maybe people think more of Eastern Promises.
This is a funny
matchup. Who was the three? I'm sorry. Was
David Cronenberg.
Okay.
This is a funny matchup because you can almost argue that neither of these guys are true horror directors. David Cronenberg almost invented a style of movie, which is a horror movie with a sci-fi body. And Cronenberg, like we've mentioned, Wes Craven, he has stunning visuals. I mean, anybody who's seen Videodrome is going to remember that TV bulging out. And it's Scanners, they're going to remember heads exploding. Guillermo del Toro, also stunning visuals. And he's been influenced by horror and uses many elements of horror. But I just don't think what his true horror movies are enough to catapult him over Cronenberg.
I was trying to guess ahead of time. I guessed Guillermo del Toro as the three seed. Because I honestly thought that's where he'd be. And I go him. Like, I mean, you go Chrono, Mimic. I liked Mimic for what it was. It was one of those 90s horror movies, which 90s were weak for horror movies. I thought it stood out. It did well. Devil's Backbone's amazing. Blade 2 was really good. I know it's not technically a horror movie, but he did the same thing Raimi did. Like, in everything he did. Like, Pan's Labyrinth has elements of a horror. I'm going Del Toro.
I think when I was putting the seeds together, the reason that Del Toro wasn't higher is largely because he didn't really appear on any list that you guys sent me. So I thought, well, I want to put him in there. So that's why he's a number six seed and maybe not higher than that. That's kind of how I try to do things. But for me, as much as I like Cronenberg, I'm going to give the nod to Del Toro too. Most of the movies that I like of Cronenberg's, Kevin's one to not want to call Aliens a horror movie because it has sci-fi, so I'm just gonna throw out Videodrome, and love that movie.
No, I would agree with that.
You can't. That's
almost all of his horror movies. You have a hard time calling.
I mean, I can call Scanners a horror movie. Whatever. I don't think anybody's gonna not say The Fly is one, although there are some sci-fi elements to that too. But I think Del Toro, This is what you think of when you think of horror director. I mean, I think maybe overall, Cronenberg might be a better film director, but he's not a better horror director.
I think Del Toro is better visually. I think he's one of the best visual directors out there.
I think it's worth mentioning that I think Del Toro has a definitive horror movie up his sleeve that he's just waiting to jizz out one day.
Yeah, and I mean, what did we say when we first talked about the news of Del Toro making a stop action or a stop motion Pinocchio movie?
It's gonna be weird.
It's gonna be scary. Frightening. Like, he's gonna frighten the hell out of us. That's you take Del Toro and attach him to Pinocchio, and our instant thought is, shit, that's gonna be creepy.
Yeah,
I think that alone
pretty much tells you everything you need to know about at least Dave and I thinking, and that's probably why we voted the way we did. And that is our biggest upset of the tournament thus far. Guillermo del Toro, the sixth seed, advancing over David Cronenberg. The 4-5 matchup, the 4 seed, Clive Barker from Hellraiser and Nightbreed. I think Dave and I both mentioned those as part of our favorites from the 80s. I think that was the one we were talking about. Those two flicks. The number 5 seed, and quite possibly the reason he's not higher, didn't appear on anybody else's list, so I really couldn't justify putting him higher. It's an English fellow by the name of Alfred Hitchcock, who made Psycho, The Birds, and I put Frenzy on there too, because that's about a killer, and I think it's another really, really well done movie. So this one, definitely, I don't think you can have stylistically two more opposed filmmakers. You won't find it in this tournament, but I thought it'd be fun to put them up together. As visually gross as Clive Barker is, Hitchcock able to scare the shit out of you by doing the exact opposite.
Clive Barker, he's directed three full-length movies.
Yeah.
But they were
good ones.
They were all good ones.
He's like written like 1,000.
He doesn't have any misses. It's not a writing, you know, it's not best horror writers. It's
Nightbreed was panned, though. Nightbreed was a giant flop.
Yeah, I'm not going from that,
everybody loves it, but it's a giant flop.
Because Lord of Illusions, amazing. Nightbreed, Hellraiser, like, that's three hits right there. Yeah. But Alfred Hitchcock.
I've got Hitchcock in a landslide. He's the master of suspense. He's actually responsible for taking away some of the power from producers and giving artistic styling to the director. He's maybe the most influential director in this tournament. I have a hard time believing any of these guys who ever made movies never saw a Hitchcock movie. So I Hitchcock in a landslide.
I mean, Psycho is still relevant. People know the shower scene. No matter what, people know that.
What are you talking about?
The birds. What a stupid fucking idea for a movie. Like, oh, the birds are attacking. It's a classic. Like, it's Hitchcock.
If you look at,
without the birds, there's no Birdemic.
Right, and what a terrible world we'd be living in. Without the birds, there would be no HBO movie coming out about the making of that movie.
And another movie and about Hitchcock.
Anthony Hopkins biopic. Yeah, it's. You know, Kevin, you hit the nail on the head. Hitchcock is an incredibly influential director. And I think he was more suspense than horror, but I think both of those things are scary. And I think there's very few, genres of film that if you were to have a tournament, you could exclude Hitchcock. Weird that he's a 5 seed, but
I mean,
he's moving on. So to recap our national division, Dario Argento blows over Alexander Aja. Lucio Fulci, his countryman, beats Peter Jackson. The 3 seed gets upset. David Cronenberg bows out to Guillermo del Toro. And Alfred Hitchcock with the 4-5 upset over Clive Barker. So we've got 8 left, 4 in each division. We'll take you through one more round on this episode, and then when we are left with our final 4, if you would like to chime in after you're listening to the episode, let us know who you think should win our finals of the American League and the National League, and then, you know, maybe who you think going further should win the whole thing. Let us know. You can get at us, send it to us in an email. That'd probably be good. That way you don't spoil it for anybody else. moviesonup@gmail.com. Just give us your thoughts, and if we've, you know, butchered anything, if you think we're nuts for picking Guillermo del Toro over Clive Barker, if that's in fact what we did. I think it is. It's
over Cronenberg.
Over Cronenberg. Clive Barker lost 2, though, to Alfred Hitchcock. If you think we're nuts for doing either of those things, let us know. moviesonup@gmail.com. That notwithstanding, we'll go ahead and move into the second round. In the American division, it's the number 1 seed, John Carpenter, against the number 5 seed, Sam Raimi. Again, as much as I like Sam Raimi, I don't even think this is close.
My gut wants to go Raimi just because, but...
You can, and make it awfully interesting.
No, it's Carpenter.
Yeah, if... Yeah,
even if just for the thing alone. But
Carpenter is awesome because, like we were saying with Hitchcock, he's a minimalist director. You know, he gets his scares a different way. He doesn't really have to do the gore of, say, Fulci.
He does sometimes, though.
He does sometimes. He can go there.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing that hurts, and it might hurt him in the finals or semifinals, is that his movies now just don't hold up, and they're few and far between. His prime was the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, but... What a prime it was.
I think where Carpenter also, one of his strengths is something that Raimi has now, is Carpenter's a great action director as well. So he's able to merge the two. Like, he brings action elements to his horror movies. Like, you look at something like Vampires, that's more of an action movie, but he blends them well. And a lot of horror directors aren't doing that.
Yeah, just understanding other types of movie can make you more sufficient in another area.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, maybe he is maybe even a more complete director than Raimi. But we're going to go ahead and advance Carpenter into the semifinals of the American division, where he will face either George Romero, the 3 seed, or the 2 seed, Wes Craven? This one I think is awfully close.
I'm going Romero. I'm throwing it right out there. I realize what Craven's done, but I think overall, I can't leave the director of Night of the Living Dead out of the final four.
I've got Wes Craven. I've got Wes Craven easily, just because it's so influential. He's changed the game. Romero has made some other movies, but he relied on zombies. And even though the zombie movies had a message, Craven's made very influential stuff, very visually stunning stuff, memorable stuff. I've got Craven.
Oh, this is exciting. I wonder who I'm going to choose. I love zombie movies. One of my favorite movies of all time is Dawn of the Dead.
I smell a butt coming.
And I think that the statement he makes against consumerism and the statements that he makes, you know, using zombies and post-apocalyptic scenarios as an allegory, there's that word again, is really cool. And I do love the way he does it. But not so fast, my friends. I gotta go Wes Craven. It's very tough not to put the guy that brought one of the most iconic characters in film history to the screen in Freddy Krueger. You can't not have him on there.
But you can ignore the guy who brought one of the most iconic film genres to the industry?
I think that there's a couple guys that were over in Italy that, yeah, I mean, they were heavily influenced by Romero. But I think that some of the stuff they did
And Craven's done it more consistently.
Yeah, Craven I get that. I think I'm leaning towards what Romero also said. He had messages in everything. He insisted on a black lead in, 1960?
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead was very social commentary heavy.
Was.
The biggest statement Craven's made is, hey, horror movies are stupid.
Yeah.
That's the message of the Scream movies, where I understand the Craven pick, but I feel strongly about
Romero.
If we
dumb this down, Romero's movies are kind of like, here's some zombies in a country, here's some zombies in the city, and they have a message. Craven has made, you know, he had Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes. In the 80s, he invented the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. The only decent movies in the 90s were horror movies were Scream, and he invented those. New Nightmare, he kind of made fun of himself and, you know, reinvented the genre. I got Craven.
I'm not going to dumb down Romero's movies because I love them. I really like them. And I think I kind of made my point on that. But like I said, I think it's close. I think it's awfully close. Can you go wrong with either of them? No, you can't. But if I've got to pick one and I'm talking about horror as an entire genre, I think that, you know, Craven, sure, he makes slashers. Romero makes zombie movies. But I think that Craven's slasher palette is a bit wider. And, you know, maybe Kevin and I are wrong. I don't know. But for the three of us sitting here, I mean, I think it is very close, but I think the two of us have got Craven. So, you know, he's moves on in a close one. I mean, if you're wrong, you know, feel free. If we're wrong, you know, feel free to get at us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can join Dave in thinking that we're both stupid, but
that's a buzzer beater. That's a buzzer beater to go to the final.
It's close.
That's the closest one yet.
It is really close, but I think that's what's so great is, you know, you can have the argument. You can see a scenario in which Romero would go through. I mean, I could see a scenario in which, you know, if we made Romero the 1 seed, which wouldn't even have been nuts, he goes over Raimi, and he was in the finals.
Yeah.
Against, you know, who knows who he's against. We'd have to see. Our championship for the best American horror director of all time, John Carpenter, Wes Craven. Let us know your thoughts on that. We'll give you ours next week, but we'll go ahead and get you to that same point in the National Division. The number 1 seed, Dario Argento, against the number 5 seed, Alfred Hitchcock. And shit, this is a tough one for me because I love both of these men.
It's Argento. Hitchcock is Hitchcock, but when you're thinking horror, I think it's Argento.
Yeah, it's Argento. Hitchcock had 70,000 movies, and a handful of them were almost horror. They were suspense. He invented some nice things, very influential. We talked about it in the last round. But Argento is horror. He personifies Italian horror, personifies national commie horror.
I think a lot of that is true. I think some of Argento's movies, a lot of his early movies are not necessarily horror. They're more suspense. Argento and Hitchcock, very similar in those respects. They were both masters of suspense, just in different times. They went about things different, sure. I think what kind of hurts Argento is the fact that Fulci was doing his thing at about the same time. But, you know, between the two, you know, horror directors, Argento's new stuff is shit, but this will give me a chance to say, if you haven't seen Argento's film, Do You Like Hitchcock? You really should, because he pays homage to quite a few of Hitchcock's movies, and he does it really well. So I'm kind of glad these two sort of met in the second round, but yeah, I think it's Argento. So he moves on to the finals, where he's looking at either his fellow countryman, Lucio Fulci, or the sneaky Spaniard, Guillermo del Toro.
I think I'm going to lose out again on this. I'm going del Toro. I'm pretty much the opposite, because I feel like this is very similar to, well, not really. It's kind of similar to Craven and Fulci. The same arguments could be made, and I don't know, for Fulci at least, but I'm going del Toro.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and go second and let Kevin decide it. Fulci, yeah, a lot of zombie movies, and those are maybe what he's kind of best known for. But again, like Argento, there was the Gaio genre, like subgenre. It's kind of like the slasher genre over here, and it was very popular in Italy before it really, you know, before it came over here with Wes Craven. And Fulci made some great kind of slasher movies outside of his zombie fame. And I think the fact that he's recognized, you know, by his peer in Romero, by his peer in Argento, to me, I have to give, for the breadth of his work, yeah, sure, there is more of it. There's a larger sample size. But I think as the entire picture, I think he's a better horror director than Del Toro, and I think he has more in the hopper.
I just think Del Toro makes everything he does feels like a horror movie. So I look at it like that.
But it feels like a horror movie.
Did you ever see a Fulci movie that didn't feel like a horror movie? No.
No, but
you haven't.
Most of them were horror movies.
Which is an argument against Del Toro. If he had another horror, a true horror movie or two here, I'm not going to compare Mimic to Zombie or From Beyond. Fulci, maybe it's unfair that these two matched up because Del Toro is a new director and Fulci is from back a couple decades. But Fulci, his work's way more influential. It's Fulci over Del Toro. If Del Toro had a couple more horror movies, I might say differently. Like, I love Pan's Labyrinth, but I don't think it's a horror movie. It's a war movie. It's a movie about a kid's imagination. I don't know. It's Fulci. I don't see a lot of kids walking around malls wearing t-shirts of Guillermo del Toro movies, but I do see a shit ton of posters and t-shirts with Fulci stuff on them.
I think that is kind of, it's an interesting point.
Going for the Hot Topic vote. I got you.
Yeah. That zombie, you know, poster, even if you haven't seen the movie, I'm sure, you know, you mentioned it or Kevin referenced the maggots coming out of the zombie. Everybody, that is absolutely an iconic image that probably does rank up there, you know, with, maybe not quite as iconic as Michael Myers or Freddy, but I think that it's probably more iconic than anything you can pick from any Argento movies. So I think, again, it's, you know, it's a close one. Maybe we're splitting hairs here, but would we have been wrong putting Del Toro through? No, maybe not. But at least from where I'm sitting and from where it appears Kevin's sitting, you know, these two Italian guys really were not only, you know, the best of their generation internationally, but I think, you know, they're still, Fulci's been dead for, I want to say, like 20 years. But, you know, people are still, you know, looking at his work, and it stands up. Del Toro, you know, if maybe we do this list in 10, 15 years, you know, maybe he's even higher than a sixth seed, and, you know, maybe, like, who is it that you said has got a movie they're waiting to jizz out?
That's Del Toro.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe he does. And I think that, you know, there's definitely some things he's got with that Pacific Rim. Mm-hmm. Looks really cool. I don't know if that'll quite be a horror movie, but, it, you know, big monsters.
I think it'll be like a sci-fi action movie that feels like a horror movie, which is what
he
does.
A bit like Hellboy. Yeah. And maybe that hurts him in this argument. I mean, I don't think he's a bad director, but again, it's kind of like the Hitchcock argument. He's a great director, but is he a better horror director than Argento? No. So maybe that's why you got to go with Fulci, just because of the breadth of his work, because mostly what he does is horror. So maybe for this argument, you know, if you do one thing, do it well. And I think between the four guys that we have left, John Carpenter, Wes Craven, Dario Argento, and Lucio Fulci, those guys are all guys that you absolutely think of as horror directors, and you absolutely think those are guys that were, you know, kind of at the top there.
I almost feel like unless these guys were matched up against each other, that you ultimately were going to come out this way no matter what the matchups were.
No, they sure as shit are matched up against each other now. So much like the Highlander, there can be only one. So it's take your pick between John Carpenter, Wes Craven, and take your pick between Dario Argento, Lucio Fulci. Let us know what you think. moviesonup@gmail.com. We will read your suggestions next week as we kind of go into our Final Four and wrap up the tournament next week. That'll be kind of our special list that we'd been doing. That we'll just carry this over for next week. So we'll finish that up. And I can gloat about being right when the director that I think should win ends up winning. I'll also be gloating next week as Cloud Atlas comes out in wide release this coming Friday against such juggernauts as Chasing Mavericks, Fun Size, and Silent Hill Revelation 3D Limited Release, The Loneliest Planet, and Pusher. So should be big week at the box office. I'm hoping for Cloud
Atlas.
I've got
Chasing Mavericks taking everything.
I really want to see Fun Size.
I do too.
I really want
to
see it.
I think I'm going to.
I think it's a sneaky like second or third place.
It looks cool. It's one of those fun movies that you don't get enough of anymore.
But does Paranormal Activity, what's it going to hold like? It's going to be interesting. I really don't know where to put Cloud Atlas because I think it's in the bomb range.
I kind of do too.
I think it's in the 15 best case scenario.
It might win best picture, but will it make 100 million? No way.
Are we doing over under? Do we want to do that?
I'll just fuck it. Cloud Atlas 15.
Over.
I'm going under.
I'll go under.
Thank you. Do we just want to do that one or do you want to put
Fun Size 13?
Under.
I'm going over.
I have to take under because
I'm going over.
I guess I don't have to. Like
I think it's sneaky.
I think maybe Cloud Atlas makes 35, but
Chasing Mavericks, $150.
I don't know that Cloud Atlas is what people want to see the weekend of Halloween.
I'm not sure.
I think Cloud Atlas will finish behind Silent Hill Revelation 3D. I just dropped the gauntlet.
It's a strong statement. It's a very strong statement. I think it's a silly one, but hey, maybe I'll be the one that's got egg on my face next week. Dave, do you have a couple strong statements for what people should watch as they're wrapping up their 31 days of Halloween?
I would have done some from the directors we did today, but I went to 80s stuff that didn't get mentioned last week. I was 100% sure Rick of the Dead would mention this one. Happy Birthday to Me. Kind of a slasher movie that kind of introduced like creative deaths. It's one of the first ones that had like really original deaths in it. So Happy Birthday to Me. And then a movie that scared the shit out of me when I was a child. I haven't watched it in a while, so it still might. I doubt it, though. Something Wicked This Way Comes.
All right. Kevin, why don't you give the folks two to watch?
I call it a horror movie, but there is a good deal of singing in it. It's Little Shop of Horrors. And two, you've got to see the best worst character ever. So watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3 to see Kincaid, who also is actually in Nightmare on Elm Street 4, but he's pretty goofy in 3.
Fair enough. I went kind of old school with a couple of guys that I wanted to put into the foreign directors, but again, I couldn't cut anybody. The first one is from 1963. It's called The Haunting, directed by Robert Wise, who also directed Curse of the Cat People and other movies you may have heard of, The Sound of Music, the original Star Trek film, and The Andromeda Strain. This is based off The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, which has been remade a couple times. They're all shitty. This one is pretty rad from 1963, so check that out. The second one I pick, another black and white movie, directed this time by Terrence Fisher, who was kind of Hammer's go-to guy, Hammer Films, in the late 50s, early 60s. I picked Dracula from 58. It's not the first of Hammer's Universal adaptations, but it is one of the best, starring Peter Cushing as Van Helsing. You may or may not know him as Tarkin from Star Trek. From Star Wars. And another guy from them star movies, Christopher Lee, as Dracula. So a couple veterans of the wars in this Hammer film. And that's kind of, you'll find those guys in a lot of those movies from that time. They're pretty rad.
There's just a couple things I want to say before we go. Last week, I was a guest on Joey Ritter's podcast. You can find that at joeyritter.com. He did me last week. This week, his guest is Mike Carrera of MXPX. So tell me how that makes sense. But go to joeyritter.com and listen to both of those episodes. And just a plug that's not related to me, Tyler Moliterno, he's been listening since day one. He just started an animation podcast called Generation Animation. First episode just went up. It's in the iTunes store, or I'm sure there's a website at some point. But other than that, you can find me at DaveBasella.com, at DaveBasella on Twitter, or find my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave.
I'm not going to plug my shit, but I want you to participate and tell us about the Final Four directors, and also come check us out at Birdemic. Come sit with us, and we'll give you buttons.
Be this coming Thursday, as you're listening to the podcast, the 25th, 8 o'clock at Tinseltown in Boardman. Check us out. We'll be the two dudes sitting real close to each other with matching buttons.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's it. Come see us. Come check out Tyler's podcast. You know what, Tyler, if you're listening, send us like the website or something.
Yeah, we'll link you or something. Yeah.
Oh, and I'll get to you about Chronicle. He posted a big thing on my page about why I hate Chronicle. I'll get back to you, Tyler. I forgot until just now, but I'll get to you.
On why you're wrong and Chronicle's terrible. So you've got that to look forward to. Aren't you the lucky one? Aren't you guys lucky? Because we'll be back next week to finish up our
Director Death
tournament. Until then, let us know what you think. Moviesonup@gmail.com. Keep it up.